very much for that lovely introduction. I'm delighted to be here. I want to thank Paul for inviting me and for having me here at OVL, and I want to thank him and all of his co-conspirators in OVL for having me here. This is my first time in Cork, my first time to have a look around the city. My old friend Mary O'Sullivan, who lived beside me in Letterkenny for a number of years, showed me around today. We got down to the English Market, the university. I've learned a few Cork words like, what is it? I've been practicing Pana and Baraka all day, but I still haven't got the lift on the last syllable. As you know, I'm from the Galway-Roscommon border, and I'm just wondering why on earth you want guest poets up here. There's so much talent in the room. I was really impressed by the people who came up, read their stuff, and could deliver it so well. So there's a lot of competition around here, I have to say. This is my second collection, Forget the Lake, and there's an awful lot of poems in this book that have to do with water. And I'm not sure what the preoccupation in Irish poetry with water is at the moment. There's at least three titles out at the minute that have either river, lake, or water in the title. It might have to do with the flooding in Douglas, or it could do with climate change, or it could have to do with the water charges, I don't know. But it's probably the water charges. I'm going to start with the poem that's, a lot of my poems will come from the west of Ireland. And from the Midlands. I haven't any Cork poems as yet, but after this I'll have to try and work on a few. My first poem is called River. It's not in this collection, it's in my first collection. And the river in this poem is the River Suck. Now the River Suck is a long meandering river between Galway and Roscommon. It enters the Shannon at Portumna, but the river went through the village where I grew up. So for me, it's a very significant part of my life. And from that river, I learned about, you know, division, diversity, boundary, and all that kind of thing. And this is going to be my first poem this evening. River. There were no mountains where I grew up. Only the miracle of McGann's Hill sloped towards the sky. No drumlins ruffled the flat fields that forced themselves to the horizon. The river broke the flatness, wound like a tired snake across the farms, dividing and joining. It was there when we crossed the bridge to school, and again at the furthest part of the farm it flooded each winter. The river was shallow at the drooping sally where the cows drank, but black and deep at the end of the next field. It undercut banks and gouged an islet where reeds and long grass waved. Golden globes of water lilies were just beyond our reach. Water hens darted from bulrushes to their nests, safe from us all. In summer, the river quietened and shrank. The callow lands bloomed into meadows and wild flowers. We built the haystacks under cascades of heat and ate lemon curd sandwiches under the single hawthorn tree. The fields grew green again in autumn, marked with brown circles. A few years ago, I went to the Tyrone Guthrie Centre in Anna McCarrick for the first time. That was 2005. And I went there in 2006, 2007 as well. And if you know the Tyrone Guthrie Centre at all, it's a very old house. It's a writer's centre, an artist's centre, overlooking a fabulous lake. And this lake is probably a couple of miles long, but it's a really fascinating lake. And when you're in the house, you can't help but be more or less cast under the spell of the lake. And one very miserable Sunday morning, I had absolutely nothing to write about. So I looked out at the lake, and this poem happened to come to be. Transitions. The lake became an estuary overnight, besieged by hammering rain, flattened, subdued to shallows of dark foil strips between trees. The drooping hazels and alders offered no consolation. The sky was falling, impaling itself on tips of forest pines. It descended to enwrap the lake. The heron had left for the lawn, neck pushed forward in disdain. The deluge had soaked him to an alabaster shape. Then, near the copper beach, he took flight across the grass and was gone. The next Anna McCarrick poem is based on the haunted room that's supposed to be in the house, the Guthrie house. Like every big house in Ireland has one or two haunted houses in it. And when I went there in 2007, the room I was allocated was supposed to be the haunted room. But nothing ever happened. I was a bit terrified the first day. But, you know. So one day I was in the room and this butterfly landed on the window. It was the most beautiful butterfly I'd ever seen. And it's a peacock butterfly. That morning, he exhausted himself on the window pane, tried to escape into the rain, but I kept him in, hid him in the drawer of the walnut chest, where my lady's looking glass stands over the narrow toilet bureau. He could not see this, despite his four gorgeous eyes. Rubies at the top on a pale yellow patch. Lapis lazuli below, dark rimmed on cream. In the toilet bureau, my lady's things rest on dark blue velvet. A clothes brush from Seven Oaks, wooden tweezers, midget teaser, and a satin photograph case. In the afternoon sun, I held him at the windowsill. He remained quite still, locked wings quivering to perfume from the garden. His feet clung to my warm palm, but he did not show his eyes, so I placed him in the open drawer. He could escape at will to roses, fuchsia, and mombrisha. By evening, he was gone. My lady's looking glass can't tell me where, but the bureau's dark blue velvet is the colour of his lower eyes. That night, I dreamt of sleeping in a summer meadow, my body covered with butterflies. When I left Anna McCarrick in 2007, I went to Dublin to do my master's. And it was very strange to leave a situation like, you know, the middle of Ireland and the beauty of Monaghan, and to be kind of in the middle of a city. And for weeks I kept thinking, well, I'm physically here in Dublin, but emotionally and every other way, creatively, I'm still back in Monaghan. And I said, I have to just, you know, pull myself together and realise where I am. And I started to write, actually, about the lake, and I put together a few notes that I had taken with me. And I wrote this poem, Lake Song. It's kind of a letting go of one place and an adjusting to the other one. And this is Lake Song, and the title of Forget the Lake comes from this poem. Lake Song. Sometimes I try to forget the lake, to forget that my long stretch of water overhung by woods, and the midrib of current by the boathouse, where every day the dance began when midday sun drank cascading diamonds from the lake's caldera, then spilled and spread swathes of silver fire. Sometimes I try to forget the lake, to forget afternoon calm as Jonah unlocked the boathouse door, dropped clanking chains that tied the boat to iron rings. Light danced on the open oars. The further out he rowed, across green-brown water, I knew it was his lake, not mine. At last he swiveled in the oars, set them clattering on the floor, gazed at sky and earth to see his share of Eden's garden. Sometimes I try to forget the lake, to forget orange sunsets as Rachel carried her book into my room, her book of the other world. When she read, it made her cry. It made me cry too, but I cried inside, showing her nothing. Nothing can bring back the dead, the silent, the forgotten. Some have their names on the wall, some wrongly written, some with no names at all, their eyes gone forever. When she read her book, the lake was grey as lead. Sometimes I try to forget the lake, to forget the full moon in July, beyond tall shuttered windows, taking her place in a cloudy sky above the withered water. I waited for her incline, saw her escape fettered clouds until she reigned alone. A shaft of moonlight split the room, reached the roses by my bed. The word winter comes from an old English word meaning time of water, and I just heard somebody saying that on, I think it was not Monty Don, who's the other gardening fellow? The other guy.
Titchmarsh.
Yeah. Titchmarsh was on one evening, and I was just going through the room, and then he said, you know, the word for winter means, is an old Anglo-Saxon word, time of water. So I thought, oh, that's really interesting. So I started to write this poem, but it went off in a different direction. And I was thinking really of the awful winter in 2010, when everything got frozen over and lakes were frozen over and people were doing daft things, like, you know, bringing their kids out in the lake and taking out the quads and running around the place on bikes out on the ice and so on. So the whole thing had, you know, really taken off in a big way to be out on the ice. Anyway, time of water. Think only of white, snow and ice. Its weird, transparent grip on skin, as if magnetized for a moment, clings its cold lust for warm blood, the need to enter and dissolve elsewhere. And when the lake froze 2 years ago, a young Polish lad slid out across the ice, dragged by two Alsatians on silver chains. Children in the houses near the lake stood with faces close to window panes, their mouths in tiny circles, transfixed by fear in their bellies that the center ice would creak, crack, and suck them down to where torpid, glass-eyed pike eased by. Where I live at the moment, I'm living in Letterkenny for most of my life, and when I went to Letterkenny, went to Donegal first, and there was one place I felt I knew already, and that was Rathmullen, because when we were kids, my father used to read the storybook about, you know, the history book about the capture of Red Hugh O'Donnell, and being brought to, how he was brought to Dublin Castle, and how he escaped in the winter and so on. So I heard him reading that story so often, and I just felt I had already been in Rathmullen. And it's a place we love, a place that we go for walks on the beach and so on. It's a really beautiful place. Pity it's so far away from Cork, but never mind. this is Dusk at Rathmullen. A road moulded to the shape of the shore. Nothing between it and the rocks, but a low hedge of copper beech, its leaves rolled up in the cold. Above the strand, the sky turns pewter, released short bursts of rain, evening sunlight funneled to make a spotlight tracing the flight path of gulls. They fanned out and banked to the east, absorbed shades of silver, mercury, and open grey. The sheen of gunmetal then vanished into light. Where rocks jutted along the sands, shells littered the tide mark. The sea's treasure trove, scallops and razor shells, all open and empty. Near them, lamellae of a thin mother of pearl, in pink, green and blue, transparent as skin, melting into air to escape break of waves on infinite sands. The place we live at the moment is called Creve. It's outside of Kenny, and Creve in Irish means branch or wood and so on. So like originally the place would have been covered by forests. But up behind where we live is another townland called Knockanar. And Knockanar means hill of the slaughter. And this poem is not really about the old battle, it's about the actual demolition of a beautiful field that was part of that hill for a long, long time. Knockanar. It took less than a week to skin the sods from the sloping acres of O'Donnell's field. By late summer, the green had bled to reddish brown. The topsoil heaped in pyramids at the lowest end. This morning's crow call over Knockanar loosens layers of my fading sleep, draws me back to world time. I reach the roadside as machines rev up, see the last 50 yards of ditch, hawthorn, ash, rosehip, split roots jutting from flattened earth like lengths of broken bones. When we went to Spain about 10 years ago, I started to read little pieces in the local papers about people coming across from Africa on small boats and being drowned in the Straits of Gibraltar. Now, the Straits of Gibraltar, on a sunny day, looks so peaceful, you think nothing bad would ever happen there. But obviously, the Straits of Gibraltar have some of the worst currents, the worst undercurrents you can find anywhere. And when people set out in those small little boats, they just happen to chance. And that was about 2002, 2003. I was just reading the accounts in the papers. And I was wondering, why don't we hear anything about that over in, and you know, we don't hear anything about this in the news. Of course, recently it's all over the news that there are more people coming, and they're coming in shiploads, and there's some disastrous results off the coast of Italy, hundreds of people drowned. Anyway, at that time, I wrote this poem called The Hymn of Islam. Shell-white ships slip through the straits between Tarifa and Tangier. Spain seems close to the African coast, where scattered white villages fade into the Moroccan foothills, patterned like the spine of a sleeping monster. Lace-fringed tips of the reef mountains lie at the vanishing point. From these villages, emigrants flee, packed tightly into fragile pateras, fit for less than six. At night, they risk their lives against the undercurrents of the Straits of Death. Some survive. Others are washed up on the beach, the nameless ones buried three deep in a graveyard above the town. On the Costa de Luz, waves roll towards creamy silver sand, white coils of transparent turquoise, like tunnels of thin glass. They seethe up the beach and splash into fronds of frothy snakes near the Moorish castle, built to a god of mercy and clemency, when few Christians knew this place. And my second Tarifa poem, or my second South of Spain poem, is called Kite Surfer. The area around Tarifa, as some of you probably know, is one of the best places in Europe for kite surfing. And if you go out there any day, you see all these guys out in the sea. It's really amazing how far out they can go and how they can manage to keep the kites in the air. Kite surfer. He crosses the line that divides black and green water, roaring beachwards. Ignores the rest and draws a foaming trail. Furthest out, his single wing, a lapis arc tipped white. His body bends to leap the surf, reaches to catch each thermal twist. Other kites hang high and still, or dive to sand in red and blue. Prince of wind and tides, the sea is his. I finished with two short poems. The second last one is called Helen's Thread. It's about my daughter going to college many years ago. She was in her room for days, and all the clothes were one side and the suitcase was the other side. So we were wondering when the clothes were going to meet the suitcase, and that didn't seem to be on the agenda at all. So I said, for God's sake, Helen, get out of the room, and I put the clothes into the case so that you'd be able to go to college. So that's what happened eventually. She did leave the room, and I put the stuff into the case, and that was that. Anyway, the morning she was to go, we discovered there were a few items missing, as you usually do, but anyway. This poem is Helen's Thread. That September Saturday, your cases sat neatly in the boot on a morning sharp with autumn's first frost. Your last two pairs of socks still frozen to the line. The amber sun raised vapor, the socks refused to thaw. In the cold glow, the sycamore dropped black-spotted yellow leaves on the tarmac near the door. You picked one up, tied it to a low branch with a length of rainbow-coloured thread. It hung, spinning, a fraction from the ground, a last plaything for your cat. Now, 2 months on, the thread remains, damp and idling in the shortening days, but holds fast in its fibres the blue, green and yellow of your childhood years. And my last offering this evening is a kind of an autumn poem. I was walking through the university today, and I mean, I really love the autumn leaves and the autumn colours and all of that. And as well as that, when I read this poem, it reminds me of, you know, not just falling leaves, but falling soldiers, because tomorrow is Armistice Day, and there's all of the talk of, you know, the soldiers, the Irish who died in the First World War, and all the loss of lives. But this poem, for me, is a very significant, just short poem, but it's a very, very significant poem, and quite a sad one. Done. Autumn comes down in a million pieces, spotted, twisted, folded, flattened, in 100 vagaries of green, yellow, orange wine. Autumn comes down under heaven's grey-blue bowl, spreading light of melted amber over fields in a light blue haze, holding in the breath of a long afternoon. Autumn comes down in the silent vortex between seasons, bearing rich gifts unaccepted, with all its own frustrated maelstrom sinking down. Thanks very much for being such a good audience. I'm sorry I don't have the Cork accent, but the next time I come, I assure you I'll have a few sentences in Cork. Thank you very much.